Don't tell me it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The rigid tool calendar of Medicare podcasts. Ready or not, here he comes, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us at our next exciting episode of Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is going to be less exciting than some episodes, but more exciting than most episodes. The farther we go down this Medicare path, the more excitement I can muster for the entertainment value and the informational value of the content we have to share with you. Another way to share content with you is to promote my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. I encourage all of you who are facing the prospect of encountering Medicare, having to deal with Medicare, and having to prepare yourselves for the change in protection that Medicare will afford you as you travel through that land, you couldn't be better advised, I'm told, than to read a copy of my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. You can buy it at barnesandnoble.com or at amazon.com. If you go to Amazon, you're going to find four different versions, an Audible book, a Kindle ebook, a paperback book, which seems to be the most popular. That's an $8 item. And the piece de resistance is the hardcover version of the book. That's a magnificent creation that people are buying up in much greater numbers than I ever anticipated. It's a high price item. It's $22, but it's suitable for gifting to your loved ones or your friends that might be approaching, say, age 45 or so. Remember, Lordy, Lordy, so-and-so is 40. Well, this would be a similar type of gift you can give to somebody to let them know that you understand that they're sneaking up on that Medicare age, and a good laugh will be had by all. Mirth and merriment will ensue. Anyway, buy the book, read the book, ask me any questions. My contact information is right in the book, and Randy's going to give it to you at the end of this episode. And I am there to answer any questions that you have. And if you decide to go ahead with your Medicare insurance to supplement the kind of paltry protection that government provides in the Medicare program, I am a licensed insurance agent, and I will help you procure the best, most cost-effective Medicare protection there is to be had. So anyway, I am going to introduce Randy Carson, the man who makes this podcast sound better than I ever could. Hello, Randy.
Doug, how are you doing on this fine day in Arizona?
Well, I think I'm doing pretty well, and I wish everybody agreed, but there are others who say that there's room for a lot of improvement. So that's my cross to bear.
Well, I've got a big smile on my face today because I got up. As you know, I whine and I whine and I whine when it's cold.
Boy, do I know that. Would you like me to expound upon that?
I'll just let that lay where it was.
Okay.
But I got up this morning, and my gosh, it was sunny and 76 degrees. I would have thought I lived in Arizona. I am living in Arizona. There you go.
You are living in Arizona, but I don't think that 76 degrees is accurate. You might want to check that again.
According to my Google Alexa, Amazon Alexa is 76. You got to believe Alexa, Doug.
Maybe so, but I'm looking at the Fox version of that. Well, you know something? I'm at a higher altitude than you. That would be the explanation. Right now, I've got 71 degrees outside my house, and you had 76 hours earlier today.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we always talk about, you know, what altitude that you're living at. It could be by the time of the episode ending, you could be down around 32 degrees, depending on how high you are.
Well, I'm hoping that you don't get irritated and place me at that altitude, because I really enjoy the lower altitudes with the warmer temperatures. That's why I came to Arizona, to be warm. I was sick of the Illinois winter. So, Randy, you're happy with the weather outside or you're disturbed by it? I didn't understand which way you felt.
I am so happy with the weather outside. I like it hot. I don't, you know, when I whine in wintertime, we were talking about it just a couple seconds ago. If it's down below 60 degrees, for sure, 58 degrees, I am not a happy camper.
Well, I'm right there with you. At least that's one thing that we both agree on. Out of the many things that we agree on, we also often agree that we should get the podcast episode moving faster than we often do.
Yes. So. Yeah. We've actually, I don't know if I told you, Doug, but we have been overspending our 75 cents budget.
Well, I can't afford to keep pumping money into this this operation. I've got to trim my expenditures, and so let's just get moving, and that way we won't need to go over that 75 cent limit that you've set for us. I've got many interesting articles here, and I don't remember what I was thinking when I collected some of these, but let's see how it goes. First thing I've got on the top of the stack is a report reveals an increase in the number of workers that are delaying their retirement. Employees are now more than twice as likely to describe their personal finances as fair or poor as they are they're twice as likely to describe them as fair or poor as they are to call them good or excellent. This is a John Hancock study, and I spent my formative years with the John Hancock. In fact, I was a third generation John Hancock baby. My grandfather created a John Hancock empire. My father ran that empire after my grandfather died, and I took a different path. I went to the John Hancock, learned the insurance business, decided I liked health insurance better than life insurance, and that's why I'm speaking to you today about Medicare supplement health insurance instead of life insurance. So as this article goes on to describe the John Hancock study, almost 4 in 10, so about 38% of workers expect that they will retire later than they originally planned. Now, this is up from 24% surveyed by the John Hancock, who said the same thing last year. Do you think maybe the economy having increasing troubles has caused more people to consider not retiring when they want to? I'm thinking that might be a big part of the problem. Retirement savings took a step backward in 2022, with 56% of workers saying that they have fallen behind in saving for retirement, compared with 43% who said the same thing the year before in 2021. Retirement plan participants are being challenged by macroeconomic shifts, rising costs, higher interest rates, meek economic growth. There's a term I had not expected to see with the economic growth description, and stock market volatility. In 2022, with a spillover effect for some participants' savings shrinking, finds the report. That's a really wacky sentence. I'm going to go on and see what else we have in this report. Building emergency savings is a struggle for many workers, the report finds. Additional findings from the John Hancock Retirement Report. There are four items here. Nearly three quarters, 71% of respondents will be focusing on growing, maintaining, or investing their savings in the coming months, with paying off debt, 44%, planning for retirement, 45%, frequently cited as short-term goals. 80% of employees say they're unlikely to work for a company that does not offer a retirement plan, while roughly half of the respondents felt their current level of debt is problematic. It appears manageable for now, as only 14% consider it to be a major problem, and 61% say they have been able to make their payments without difficulties. 90% of employees say that learning about sources of retirement income, projections of income, and connecting with an advisor would encourage them to do more to prepare for retirement. The final thought here is the good news is that it is clear that supporting employees through financial wellness programs and working to get them engaged in their personal financial benefits is likely to help boost overall employee satisfaction, retention, and productivity. So take heed, all of you financial advisors. AHIP, this is a company that I am forced to deal with. It's the America's Health Insurance Plans. They are a big booster of Medicare Advantage plans. And for that reason, I do not like them. And Randy's getting whiplash, shaking his head. No, no. Unfortunately, I'm forced to deal with AHIP every year because even though I don't sell Medicare Advantage plans, I fully certify and qualify to sell those plans if it ever happens that I'm accused of not selling them because I'm too lazy to do the certification. Then I will be able to proudly say, liar, you're a liar. Don't tell lies about me. I'm fully certified to sell Medicare Advantage plans. So anyway, there's a little blurb from AHIP, and it says AHIP reports rising Medigap uptake. Medigap is a simile for, it's a synonym for Medicare supplement. Those are the Medicare plans that I recommend and sell. So when you hear the word Medigap, just think Medicare supplements. And this little statement says an AHIP report found that the percentage of traditional Medicare beneficiaries who purchased Medicare supplement plans, in other words, the number of Medicare participants who purchased Medicare supplement plans increased from 35% in December of 2017 to 41% in December of 2021. While 54% of those with Medicare and no other coverage selected supplement plans in the year 2020. Medicare enrollees without supplemental coverage were nearly three times more likely to report difficulty paying their medical bills in the past year compared with those who had coverage through original Medicare plus a Medicare supplement. So what are the lessons here? First of all, if you don't buy a Medicare supplement, you're likely to have trouble paying your bills. If you do buy a Medicare supplement, you are much less likely and probably will never have trouble paying your medical bills because Medicare supplement is the greatest protection there is if you are a Medicare participant. The thing that screws me up about this article is that everybody's been screaming about how Medicare Advantage plans are taking over the world, including AHIP, the organization that did that particular study. So all of a sudden now in their fine print, that's a little tiny, tiny article, a little small print. I don't think they wanted anybody like me to see it, but they are talking about the fact that Medicare supplement sales are going up rather than down. So I'm hoping that that trend continues because that shows that people entering the world of Medicare are buying by far the best coverage there is, and they're not being swayed by those silly television ads. Here is an article that may give a lot of help to a lot of people. It's apparently we're making progress in diagnosing cancer with a home urine test. Now, they're not ready yet. I don't want anybody to get too excited, but the headline on this article says, could a urine test detect pancreatic and prostate cancer? Study shows a 99% success rate. And this is on my mind because Jerry Springer just recently died, maybe a week or two ago, and he died of pancreatic cancer. I don't know anybody. Well, I know one woman who has it now who is, I think, doing okay. But otherwise, pancreatic cancer has been a death penalty for most people. I believe that it's hugely distressing diagnosis when somebody gets pancreatic cancer. It's like a death sentence. So authors of a new study say a cancer urine test may be available eventually. Now, there's the question mark for home use, but more research is needed. A simple urine test could detect pancreatic and prostate cancer with up to a 99% rate of accuracy, says a team of researchers from some Korean outfit. And I'm not surprised to hear Dr. Ho Young is the lead author of the study. And Dr. Young says cancer urine contains cancer metabolites and is different from normal urine. The study, recently published by the Journal of Biosensors, aimed to determine whether urine tests could detect those cancer metabolites which are released by cancer cells to promote tumor growth. And then I've got a little headline here that I thought might appeal particularly to Randy. It's right in the middle of this story, so I could have deleted it, but I wanted to share it with Randy. Randy, a North Carolina man developed uncontrollable Irish accent during prostate cancer treatment.
No kidding. You know, that's
uncontrollable is the operative word there.
So what they forgot to tell us was, did he have this before or did it just drop out of a tree?
I think it dropped out of a tree. I think he was a normal all-American boy. And during prostate surgery, now, I don't know if he woke up in the middle of the surgery. It doesn't really give a lot of detail. But that uncontrollable Irish accent must have frightened the people in the operating room, I'm guessing.
So did he keep it? Did it stay with him?
I'm going to have to do more research. I probably get back to you as soon as I can.
Well, I was just going to comment that that sounds very similar to the foreign language syndrome. And they don't, it's not always, you know, like a surgery, but every once in a while, there'll be some, it's very rare, there'll be some person in the world pop, you know, go to sleep, you know, with an English accent or no accent and wake up with a French accent.
I wish I could have done that because I really had a struggle in college. I took some French in grade school. I took some French in high school. I got to college. They said, hey, take all these tests and you'll pass right out. You won't even have to take any foreign language. And I did so badly on the tests for French that I had to take the language courses at half credit. It was like they punished me for even admitting that I had ever taken them.
So, I'm not laughing at you, but
you're not laughing at me, but you're not laughing with me because I'm not laughing. Let me tell you, that is also
university approach.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so I'm continuing with the the article about urine tests. After the urine sample was placed on a test strip, the researchers used a special type of light scattering technique that generated a fingerprint spectrum of chemicals which detected the cancer metabolites. Dr. Young said the tests can detect cancer at various stages. The purpose of developing this kind of technology is to screen the cancer patient before they go to the hospital. We are not sure that the test strip can differentiate cancer at very early stages, but at least it suggests the possibility of cancer status. So the patient may then go to the hospital for a precise medical checkup. Going on with this article, pancreatic cancer rates are rising faster among women than among men. A doctor, a urologist with the Memorial Hermann in Houston, who was not involved in the study, is optimistic about the future of this technology, but he's not jumping completely on board just yet. The purpose of developing this is, if the test is as reliable as they say it is, it may have an important role in screening, as the current PSA prostate-specific antigen blood test that we use is notoriously unreliable. Now, they tell guys like me and Randy and even Roy Brotherhood, our frequent guest, to have a PSA test all the time in case they have prostate cancer. This is like an early warning symbol or symptom, early warning signal. But this article right here, this guy is quoted as saying, if the test is as reliable as they say it is, it may have an important role in screening because the current PSA, prostate-specific antigen test, is notoriously unreliable. And I've got to tell you, I have a friend who had prostate cancer symptoms, like had to get up in the middle of the night, and it got worse and worse over the years. He had to get up more frequently. He was not getting any sleep at all, but his PSA score was a very benign 0.5. It stayed at 0.5 for years. Finally, he went in for a complete physical exam, and they said, your prostate is in really bad shape, and we've got to do something about it now, or it's going to kill you. But his PSA test score was completely fine. So there's one person who fell victim to an unreliable PSA test. And this doctor is saying that the PSA test is notoriously unreliable. So this doctor remains a bit skeptical. Although they report excellent sensitivity and specificity for the data to support this is only available at the request of the research team. He's not happy with the research team. For example, were the patients diagnosed with prostate cancer in severe stages where it's obvious that they have prostate cancer, even without any urine tests? Was it just as accurate for low-grade and high-grade cancers? Whenever I hear about exciting new technology, I'm always receptive, he said, but with a raised eyebrow. Urine screenings can be used by anyone, says Dr. Young. That's the Korean doctor. The end goal is for this type of technology to be able to be available for at-home testing. He foresees several possible practical uses, including screening for cancer before going to the hospital, monitoring for cancer recurrence after treatment, and supplementary testing, in addition to blood work. The study authors recognized some limitation of the research. It was hard to get enough urine samples from cancer patients, he said. The team used 100 samples in the study, and they're continuously collecting more from hospitals throughout Korea. More studies are needed to see if the test works where there is a urinary tract infection or blood in the urine, which is not uncommon in patients with prostate cancer. The last thing you want is a screening test that ends up having a lot of false negatives. If it can survive the scrutiny, then it has the potential to revolutionize prostate cancer screening. The researchers' ultimate goal is for urine screenings to extend eventually to other types of cancers, such as lung and colorectal cancer. Pancreatic cancer makes up around 3% of cancer diagnoses in the U.S. and 7% of deaths, according to the American Cancer Society. So prostate cancer is the most common type of cancer among American men, with about 1 in 41 dying of the disease. So I am hopeful, cautiously optimistic, that pancreatic cancer therapy will be, testing will be made into a urine test that one can do at home. But there are plenty of reasons to be cautiously optimistic, and emphasis on the word cautious. The other related area to that is artificial intelligence. And I think what we'll do is we'll put the artificial intelligence information back on the pile and start to deal with that next time. So it looks like I've used up all my available time here, Randy, and I'm happy that I was able to share all the information with the audience.
You have done a fine job of covering a lot of interesting information today, but I would just like to make a comment on that first article that you summarized for us out of the Hancock.
Yes, by all means.
It sounded like such a positive, you know, assessment of where our economy is. I was shocked. I thought we were just going along swimmingly, Doug. What happened?
Well, I believe that we've fallen off a cliff, but we're not being told that we've fallen off the cliff just yet. I think there's a lot of news, economic news, that's not pleasant, that has yet to come our way, if you ask me.
I'm shocked. I'm just absolutely shocked.
The future is not as bright as they would have us believe. I think we're in for a few more tough times than we've been told about.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we have used up our 75 cents. We're coming in on 80 cents now, and I just don't have the change. So we're going to have to sign off. But before I do, there's several things I always like to cover. Don't forget, Doug is a licensed agent to help you with your Medicare supplement plans nationwide. He loves to hear from you at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. Check us out at the website, medicareforthelazyman.com. Or you can go get yourself a paperback, the 2023 version, at either Barnes. Well, no, the paperback. Is paperback available at Barnes & Noble?
Barnes & Noble has only the paperback.
Okay, so you can get yourself a paperback at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The Barnes & Noble one's a little more colorful,
I understand. Correct.
You can get an audio, you can get a Kindle. But in the meantime, if you're just really hunting for a way to give Doug a pat on the back, and I certainly would, go out and find your way to get us a podcast rating on that and or the book, because we're always in the rating wars and we would certainly enjoy your support along the way. But now, if you haven't been keeping track of time on your digital watch, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones. in his fortress of solitude up behind Cave Creek. He lives in Arizona now, but he was originally from Oklahoma. And today I clocked it in. I checked the dew point. I checked the oxygen content. I did all that stuff. He is sitting at about 12,000 feet.
All right. Get my oxygen mask out. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. It is a pleasure to share this time with you, and we'll look forward to talking to you next time. Bye-bye.